Okay, we'll get started. The April 2nd, 2014 meeting of the Story County Board of Adjustments will come to order. Roll call, please.
Miller?
Here.
McGill?
Here.
Scarlett?
Here.
Kielmeyer, absent.
Board members, you've been provided with a tentative agenda for tonight's meeting. Are there any changes or additions to note?
No.
Okay, then all those that would like to indicate an approval agenda for tonight's meeting, indicate by saying aye.
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 We also received on our packets this time the draft minutes for the February 5th, 2014 minutes. Do we have any corrections or changes to those minutes to be considered this evening?
No.
Okay. Hearing none, the minutes were standard approved as they were distributed electronically. Okay. Do we have any members of the public that would care to address the board on items other than the agenda items this evening, the cases? Okay. We don't have any of that. We don't have any old business that is in there or tabled, so we move on to new business. We have a number of issues this evening to consider. Just to let people know how the proceedings of the Board of Adjustments work, basically, as we start off, the planning staff will present the staff report. We will talk about any letters or communications that have been received by the public prior to the meeting so that we can enter those into record. We will ask for the applicant to put their case forward in front of the board. After that, we will ask for comments from the public, other interested people that would like to comment on the applicant as we go through that. The hearing will then be closed. After we're done with that, the hearing will be closed. We will give the applicant a chance to have a closing statement if there's issues that have come up as part of the public portion. And we will close the hearing at that point in time. We will deliberate the case in front of you this evening, and we will come up with an answer tonight. It's not a matter of waiting till sometime else. However, during that deliberation, we would ask that people only approach the podium if the board asks you to do so. That's part of the deliberations as we go. So that's kind of how it ends up working. And has everyone signed in? We have a number of people here this evening. There's a sign-in over here. If you haven't, we would certainly appreciate that at this point in time.
Yep.
And with that, we will get started this evening. The first case that we have today is CUP 02-08, the Venice Conditional Use Permit. It's a minor modification.
Good evening. As you had mentioned, this is the Venice LC CUP minor modification. This is a minor modification to a CUP that was approved back in 2008. The property owner listed on this one is AYA Ranch LC. You'll notice within this modification there's actually two different property owners. However, they are brought together into this one conditional use permit. Looking at the property location, we're on the north side of West 190th Street between G.W. Carver and Pine Grove Lane, which goes into Squaw Valley Subdivision. The address of this location is 3715 West 190th Street. Zoning in place is A1 Agriculture. It is classified as an agricultural use. The Ames Urban Fringe Plan does designate the property as agricultural and farm service, and Ames and Gilbert are both within 2 miles of the CUP area. Looking at the map here on the screen above, will kind of show you the perimeter of the complete conditional use permit area. Right here, the initial conditional use permit on just the winery itself just included this kind of really long, narrow piece right here. There was a modification last year that brought in this extra 40 acres right here, and that's kind of the general area. You can't probably really see it, but there's a new building that's in place right about here, and that's kind of the area that we're looking at that's going to be used here. As you'll recall, last March, actually March 6th of 2013, there was a minor modification to the original conditional use permit in this case. And that was approved by the Board of Adjustment for the Prairie Bloom Farm. That particular modification proposed a new cleaning facility for vegetables and a storefront to sell them at the east edge of the existing winery's parking lot. The hours for that operation were to be 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday from roughly April through November. At that time, the applicant stated that the car flow between the two uses will be the same as before, and that modification was ultimately approved. This modification is a request to include a brewery. The brewery is proposed to be open Thursday through Sunday, no later than 10 p.m., and would close at 5 p.m. on Sunday. The brewery would serve the same function as the winery and would serve almost as an extension to their events, the weddings and et cetera, that are currently taking place on that property by allowing the visitors to also purchase beer on top of the wine. Going back to the original conditional use permit, that was for the Prairie Moon Winery that was issued a CUP under the Youth Farms Retail and Novelty. The Board of Adjustment did approve that conditional use permit on July 2nd, 2008. Prairie Bloom Farm also fell under the use of Farms Retail and Novelty, and staff does believe that the proposed brewery would continue to fall under that conditional use. Staff did determine this to be a minor modification. As the board's aware, there's three levels of modification. There's a major modification, a minor modification, an insignificant modification. Minor modification kind of being the in-between, between the major and the insignificant, obviously, but we did determine this to be a minor modification. In determining if the modification should be approved, the Board of Adjustment will need to determine that all the standards of approval will continue to be satisfied within the proposed modification. Staff has determined that there was not a substantial impact from the modification, but with the addition of the brewery and beer sales, there was a discernible impact, and there was a similar modification that was done last year in March. The structure for the proposed modifications use is already in place, and that was granted an agricultural exemption on February 9th of 2012. A condition on that agricultural exemption did state that it was not to be used in conjunction with the existing conditional use permit. Again, you'll recall last year with the minor modification, the applicant did apply for that particular modification was approved with a condition that stated that the applicant should apply for a zoning permit on the existing structure as it added a commercial use, and it would no longer be falling under the agricultural exemption clause of state code. We did note that to date no zoning permit application has been received for the structure, and if this modification is approved, staff would recommend that that condition be carried forward, that building does apply for a zoning permit. The proposed modification would likely serve as a use that would be customarily incidental or subordinate to the winery, kind of an accessory use to the winery. CUP 0208 was approved with application materials that stated the winery would not be open past 11 p.m. on any night, and the proposed brewery would continue to fall within that time frame. And there is a potential there is the potential for an increase in traffic from the proposed modification. But at the modification site plan does show the addition of 6 parking stalls, that it's safe to assume that the increase in traffic will be minor. Looking at current traffic counts on that road, it does carry about 620 vehicles per day. The building that is being proposed is approximately 5,400 square feet in size. The maximum number of parking stalls allowed would be 22. Again, this site plan and what is currently out there does show 6 proposed stalls, so we're well within that range. Staff did note that through aerial photography and through a site visit, we are able to determine that at least one accessible parking space has been installed, which does meet Story County's minimum required. The proposed modification does not add any additional signage or outdoor lighting, and it does not appear to be a detriment to environmental and visual resources, and does not appear to generate excessive noise, vibration, dust, smoke, fumes, odor, glare, groundwater pollution, or other undesirable, hazardous, or nuisance conditions. I did want to point out the one interagency comment that we did receive. It was from Story County Environmental Health, having to deal with the septic system that's on site. Margaret James, the program director for Story County Environmental Health, did talk to the Iowa DNR, who did state some concerns with how the brewery's wastewater would be handled. Of course, we're not experts on the wastewater portion of it, but you'll see on here in the next slide that if the Board of Adjustment does go with approving the CUP modification, staff would recommend a condition that states that the applicant work with Story County Environmental Health and the Iowa DNR to mitigate concerns expressed by those two departments in regards to the wastewater treatment of the brewery. With that, your four conditions are listed on the screen here above, and if there's any questions regarding the modification, I'd be happy to answer them. The minor modification that was done last March, the building that they had built the building about a year prior to coming through with the first modification a year ago. They did it with an agricultural exemption, which meant that it was supposed to be used for agricultural uses, and at that time we stated that it could not be used with the conditional use permit for the winery. They then came forward with a modification that included that building into the conditional use permit for the winery. At that point, we stated that it could no longer be an ag-exempt building. They needed to get a zoning permit for it. My understanding with the Prairie Bloom Farm, the vegetable processing center, that never came to fruition. The use really never took place, and that might be more of a question for the applicant. So I believe with that, they technically really didn't need, well, at some point they do need to get a zoning permit for that, but there was no violation that occurred since the building was never being used.
Well, that then, for staff, becomes another query. I mean, if we have already approved a minor modification for a function that never existed, and at some point in time, does that expire? Does it become not applicable? Maybe 10 years down the road, somebody decides to do something that's remotely covered under that. Is that an issue we need to be concerned
with? And that was something in reviewing this application I did think of. It was kind of my opinion at the time that I didn't think we needed to do anything with it because, again, it was approved. And if that function was to exist, would the impact adding that plus the brewery be a big deal? I didn't think so personally. However, if the use, I believe it's 5 years. If it does not take place within 5 years, it automatically...
We have an expiration date,
yeah.
So it's not like it continues in perpetuity,
yeah,
for something 20 years down the road.
Yeah. However, again, if the Board of Adjustment would like to expire that, you do have that option, I believe. So.
Okay. Hearing none then, we would like to ask for the applicant if there's anything that they would like to present at this point in time.
Elliot Thompson, I'm representing this, and I guess we just wanted to say that it's, and I guess I'll address the zoning permit that we talked about the last time. That was kind of our goal, and again, we never ended up doing anything with the building. That was our first year doing it, and we didn't really have the quantity and things to actually populate and run what we thought we were going to be able to run. So we didn't do anything with it. We didn't use the building, and this is kind of the new idea with that. So. And I guess I kind of talked about it here, but it's going to be used in the same way as the winery. We don't want it to feel like a bar or anything like that. We want it to be like this family atmosphere. We have the farm and then the brewery, and it's all kind of this greater complex, and we want to have it function in that way. So that's why we're open only until 10 and a few days a week, and we want to keep it that way.
That was going to be, I appreciate you saying that. That was going to be kind of my question as you went through it. You know, as I go out there as a patron, if you will, I fully understand supporting events. Obviously, they have an events area.
Yeah.
But as the venue that's in this particular building, I mean, how much seating? I mean, how big of a place? I mean,
the seating will be
a tasting room, or is this something different from that?
No, it's going to function as a tasting room sort of thing, kind of like a winery would. So the seating would be no more than like 45, and that's including a few seats outside. So it's going to function as kind of a tasting room. You can come out and get a beer there, but it's not going to be like this rowdy bar atmosphere.
Not looking at big screen TVs.
And no.
Huh. Trying to make sure I understand the nature of the business.
Departmental meeting on behalf of the applicant here, but Did they talk to you about this beer making wastewater, these issues, and
if well, we've dealt with Fox Engineering out of Ames before, and we were going to go to them next, and we had talked about putting in a storage tank and things like that. So that's something that we were going to talk to them about, and then whatever they recommended, we would proceed with. So that's definitely up there on the priority list. So
I'd say that likely will be a condition, but it's really not part of the land use portion of the Board of Adjustment.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Other questions? Before we move on to the public, then, anything else that you've got today?
No, that's pretty much covered here. And just,
Before we move on to the public section, is there any other comments you received by email or correspondence?
And this, you know, this was scheduled for the Board of Adjustment last month, and I just will add one with the Squaw Valley subdivisions, but just to the south. We did receive about a month ago a call from a landowner there that just stated that the winery to date has been a really good neighbor to them, and that they had no concerns about it as long as it was going to fit within the existing time frame that was taking place now. So.
Okay. Do we have any comments from the public, people who would like to comment on this before we move forward? Okay. If not, I don't think we'll have any closing comments at this point in time, and we will now close this case for purposes of deliberation. As we move forward, the first thing we need to do is to adopt the findings of fact. In other words, if we've got any issues with the things that staff has presented, if we felt there's any gaps in there, we would want to identify those at the time.
I guess I move that we adopt the findings of fact and the staff report prepared for and presented to the Board of Adjustment. Second.
Okay, we've got a motion and a second to adopt the finding of fact and the staff report prepared for and presented to the Story County Board of Adjustments. Roll, please.
McGill?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
Steelmeyer?
Okay. When we go...
Sorry, I had one more. Scarlett.
Sorry.
Sorry.
Apologies. Okay. So the first thing that we have to do then is look at the decision, and we have to consider the five criteria first of compatibility, transition, traffic, parking and loading, signs and lighting, environmental protection. Are there any concerns from the board members on any of those criteria as we move forward?
Well, I guess the only thing that's related to this environmental protection, and I think that can be satisfied with a condition. Sounds like the applicant's willing to work and actually has prepared for it, so I've got no trouble with that.
Okay. Okay. So once we go through those development criteria, and if we do not have any concerns on those, the next items that we have to consider after that is whether this project would not adequately protect health, safety, and welfare of the persons residing or working in the adjoining or surrounding property, to impair an adequate supply of light and air to the surrounding property, unduly increase congestions in the roads or the hazards from fire, flood, or similar dangers, diminish or impair established property values on adjoining or surrounding properties, and not be in accordance with the intent, purpose, and spirit of this ordinance of Story County. Do we have any concerns from the board on those criteria?
No.
Okay.
Well, I've only got a question, and that is, at these interdepartmental meetings, I assume that the sheriff is part of these discussions, or at least is invited to them. I mean, is the sheriff providing the law enforcement services out there? So are we concerned about, I don't know, alcohol consumption beyond what already might be going on out there?
Let me answer it in multiple steps. First of all, with the modification to a conditional use permit, they're not required to go through the interagency review. So first of all, they're not part of that. The initial conditional use permit was. Second, the sheriff's office is not involved with those. We do have emergency management that's involved in that team, which I think serves an extension of the sheriff's office in a sense. And lastly, yeah, the sheriff's office would be the one that would provide response to this area.
Is the sheriff's office notified through this process in any way?
Other than through emergency management, I don't know where that communication takes place. I'm looking around because it's a little bit above my head. So.
Okay. That's a good question.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, with that, I'd like to seek a motion to adopt the decision.
Move to adopt the decision regarding the development criteria and the staff report prepared for and presented to the Story County Zoning Board of Adjustment.
Okay, so we've got a motion and a second to adopt the decision regarding the development criteria in the staff report prepared for and presented to the Story County Board of Adjustment. Please.
Scarlett.
Aye.
Steelmeyer. McGill.
Aye.
Miller.
Aye. So then we come down to our final order, which I believe is to approve the modification along with the criteria of settling of the wastewater permit portion.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I move that we approve the modifications proposed by the applicant, case number CUP 208.2, as discussed by the Zoning Board of Adjustment and the staff report prepared for and presented to the Zoning Board of Adjustment, finding that all applicable standards of approval will be satisfied, including a condition that the applicant work with the Story County Environmental Health Department and Iowa Department of Natural Resources to mitigate concerns related to beer-making wastewater.
Second. I certainly couldn't have said that any better. You didn't hear that.
Thank you.
I'm not going to restate that whole thing, but I will say that we have got a motion and a second along the line that was there. That really was exceptionally well worded as we go through that. So, roll call, please.
McGill.
Aye.
Scarlett.
Aye.
Miller.
Aye.
Steelmeyer.
Your request has been approved. Thank you. We come to the second item on the agenda this evening. It's another conditional use permit. This one is for Prairie Rivers of Iowa, CUP 02-08. Staff, could we have your report?
Yeah, good evening. Again, this is regarding CUP 01 of 2014, also known as the Prairie Rivers Conditional Use Permit, for property owned by Cleo's Gardens LLC of an area land in the northwest corner of the northeast corner of Section 26, right along Highway 69 there, just south of Ames. There's two parcel identification numbers associated with this conditional use permit request. Total size of the area is 12 gross acres. Land is zoned A1 agricultural and is classified as commercial as it contains facilities for former nursery, known formerly as Ames Nursery, as well as Cafferty Nursery. You can see a surrounding property owner map that was mailed to all surrounding property owners within 2 miles of quarter mile of the subject property. There you can see it highlighted in red. Made mine red, even though Charlie made his yellow. All the surrounding property owners there that were notified are highlighted in blue. The request is for a conditional use permit to allow use of all the existing facilities for a retail and novelty farm. They would utilize the existing greenhouses and agricultural grounds for demonstration purposes and educate growers in new and evolving growing and propagation techniques. Utilizing existing structure may be used to help aggregate regionally grown produce into larger grouping to allow for enhanced processing and wholesale marketing. They would also, again, utilize existing buildings for their administrative offices. The application materials contain details on how each structure would be used, and that was supplied to you in your packets. They anticipate that the staff for this facility would consist of 10 to 15 individuals, either part-time, full-time, seasonal staff, or interns. Again, just as in previous conditional use permit requests, we look at these six standards of approval, as well as the five additional. Staff analysis of those standards of approval noted that no new buildings are proposed for this request, and all existing buildings have been in existence for a similar use since 1958 at the earliest. The property is surrounded by agricultural land. Ingress and egress to the site is provided through the driveway on Highway 69. Staff's opinion that this provides suitable flow for the amount of traffic the uses on the property will generate. The site plan provided shows 24 parking spaces along the south side of the property and another 7 spaces along existing buildings. The plan also shows adequate area for accessible spaces in accordance with the ordinance and American Disabilities Act requirements. The proposed use should have little, if any, impact on vital environmental resources in the area. Additionally, the mission of the use itself fosters environmental sustainability and stewardship of the land, both on the property and throughout the region. Notification letters were mailed on the 26th, and legal notifications were published on the 27th. Staff has yet to receive any comments for that, either before the Planning and Zoning Commission meeting or this meeting. Through the interagency review team, we did receive a note from Margaret Jange that noted that septic pass TOT inspection for current water use. Health Department will need to know specific wastewater loading from the house and office. If the house will be occupied, I believe the addition of this many employees will be too taxing on the existing system, and the septic will have to be upsized. Prairie River should contact Health Department when water usage and house occupancy is known. On March 3rd this year, the Planning and Zoning Commission reviewed and recommended approval with the following condition: that all required accessible spaces shall be marked on site. This is kind of our standard condition there. With that, I leave you with the following four alternatives. Happy to answer any questions.
So the condition of requiring all accessible spaces shall be marked on site, I mean, if that's in the existing land use, is it, what's the importance of duplicating that as part of this conditional use?
The accessible spaces aren't currently marked on the site. Yep.
According to the existing land use, should they be? I guess I'm just wondering.
Yeah, in order
chicken and eggs, as you go through what's first or second.
Yeah, just like we're requiring them to go forward with a conditional use permit, even though the nature of the business is similar. The prior greenhouse was allowed through zoning as a right prior to when we required greenhouses to go through conditional use permit processes. So any new uses on the site are required to be in conformance with the code.
My point is, let's take the previous case as such. We didn't put a condition that says that your accessible spaces will be marked. And I'm just wondering about the redundancy of this as being applicable to the conditional use permit process or some other requirements that you have.
I guess I'm not sure how to answer your question.
But I'm getting at the end. I'm just trying to figure out why, out of all the different conditional use permits, are we saying that, oh yeah, don't forget to sign your accessible permits, but we haven't said it in the other one?
I think I understand what you're saying. The requirement is specified in the regulations, but I think this is another step beyond that to ensure that if it is not set, it might be redundant, you're correct, in that manner, but it is another avenue to ensure that it is successfully achieved.
I just ask, when we get more than one,
I don't see
one has it and one doesn't, as to what.
And as Ryan said, this was a longstanding use that these types of spaces had not been marked, given the existing use.
Questions for staff this evening relative to this? Okay. Hearing none, then, do we have someone to speak for the applicant this evening? If so, would you come to the podium and identify yourself?
I'm Mike Prendrup with Prairie Rivers of Iowa, here to represent and request a conditional use permit. As has been stated, this is a facility that was formerly a nursery but will be utilized primarily as a teaching and growing facility to promote local foods, local foods growing, and the marketing of local foods. There will be some staff involved with the Prairie Rivers of Iowa. I might add that Prairie Rivers of Iowa is a not-for-profit organization, a 501c3 organization. And we'll be working with the property owners, Cleo's Gardens, Mike Mintz, the property owner. So I think everything has been pretty well summed up in what has been provided by the staff. I would, I guess, say that the accessible parking is not an issue. We certainly have every intention of doing that. The need to meet with the health Board of Health and determine the proper sizing of a septic system once things are a little bit more refined is certainly something that we would intend to do.
I just got one question, and it has to do with the second piece of the application as you go down through that, and that was the one, the utilization of existing structures may be used to help aggregate regionally grown produce into larger groupings to allow for enhanced processing and wholesale marketing. That starts to sound like a warehousing operation. Could you elaborate on that a little bit more?
That's not the intent, and what we would be looking at would be locally grown products. So many times there's not a sufficient quantity from any one grower that would allow it to be put together either for future marketing or for processing. These products would be perishable in nature, so things would not be warehoused for any length of time, but it would serve as an opportunity to bring materials together and hopefully on a very regular basis, you know, no more than probably weekly, things would be brought together, aggregated, and then shipped out from this facility to either be marketed elsewhere or processed.
Questions for the applicant? Thank you very much. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Do we have any members from the public that would like to address this application? Or if you come forward and identify yourself, we appreciate it.
My name is Robert Musselman, and I own one of the parcels of land adjacent to this. And I don't have a comment, I have a question. And it might be for staff, it might be for the proprietor. Will the approval of this have any impact on farming practices of the surrounding properties? Will it restrict them in any way from ongoing, continuing farming operations as they currently operate? That's just simply my question. Exactly. Planning practices or besides anything like that that existing the existing farmers in the area are currently doing. That's just my question for it before I would have any other comment one way or the other.
I think something like that would kind of constitute a reverse setback somewhat, which, you know, are illegal in the state of Iowa. There's no such precedent that any sort of condition could be placed that would require surrounding property owners to limit the current use, which is allowed on their property.
Anyone else? Then I would turn around and ask the applicant if you would come forward in kind of a redirect slash closing statement as to your intent, do you intend to, I don't want to say pull any strings or to do anything that would adversely affect the neighbors in the area above and beyond any restrictions they currently have by the codes they're under?
No, part of what we're doing is to demonstrate how this type of operation and growing can fit into the Iowa landscape, and certainly we, at this point, I see no reason why we would have any want to ask for any restrictions on existing agriculture. Certainly, things the state regulations in terms of nutrients and pesticides would we don't anticipate there being any problem there, and they would not ask for anything in addition.
Yeah. Anything else that you would like to say in closing?
Certainly request this. We think it's something that is beneficial to the community and beneficial to the area. It helps diversify agriculture, it meets the requirements. I think it's a, we feel it's a great opportunity for the community and would appreciate your support.
Ryan, I failed to ask if there was any other communications, email, correspondence, or otherwise.
No, as I stated in my presentation, there have not been.
Write that right down. Okay, that being the case, we will now close. And that'll be fine. Please approach the podium.
I'd just like to say, as long as there's no restrictions, then we'd be absolutely in support of it. We think it's a good idea. We just wanted to make sure there would be no restrictions placed on any of the neighboring properties.
Now we will close this particular case and begin the portion of the deliberation. And the first things that we have to do is to ask about the findings of facts, the stuff that the data that's provided by staff. Are there any additions or deletions that we need to consider for that?
Looks good. I move to adopt the findings of
facts and the staff report prepared for and presented to Story County. Okay. We've got a motion and a second to adopt the findings of facts and the staff report prepared for and presented to Story County Zoning Board of Adjustments. Roll, please.
McGill?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
Steelmeyer?
Aye.
Scarlett?
Aye.
Thank you.
Okay. Without going through the readings, there are six different criteria that we've identified before. And are there any concerns on the areas that are in there of anything? And I'll voice one. You know, there's the question mark of traffic. You know, the way the nursery was used before had a certain amount of modest amount of traffic, kind of in and out, whatever. I do have a bit of a concern, and I guess I might ask for consideration of the board on a condition that would ask for the staff to review the operation in a year, not necessarily ongoing, to assure that the nature of the intent of this doesn't turn into some kind of a warehousing operation with lots of trucks coming in and out, you know, things that we can't anticipate right now. It seems like that is, while we have heard the intent, if ill-defined, it might be worth a check a year down the road to make sure that this hasn't turned into something that definitely wasn't intended. So that would be my particular comment relative to these criteria. I'm not concerned because I think it can be addressed with a single condition from my perspective. I think it's a great reuse in terms of an existing facility. I think it's wonderful from that perspective, but I just think looking down the road, we might want to say, gosh, I didn't think we were going to do that, and that's really, and just a review. It doesn't take us very long, a year down the road, to say, is this working the way that we thought it was going to work?
I would concur with that. Mm-hmm.
Wait a year? Wait until maybe the end of the growing season?
Well, that's a good point. It might be 2 years down the road. By the time you get two growing seasons, get things under your belt, and you're settling in, I would certainly agree with that. It's just some sort of a spot check down the road to assure that we've made the right decision. Mm-hmm. So as we move forward, but like I said, that relative to the decision on the development criteria, I'm comfortable that we could address that.
Only other concern, of course,
about wastewater again. Yeah. About wastewater again. It does appear that there was interagency review, though, on this one, right? Yeah. And it looks like Ms. James from the Environmental Health Department, I guess I'm not too concerned because it appears that existing conditions are just fine, and it sort of depends on whether or not the house is used at some later point. I mean, what do you guys do at that point? How is it that they can compel? I mean, if there does need to be a better system or a higher capacity system, at what point does that get triggered? Do we know?
I work for the health department too. It'd be based on usage. If they're keeping the structure as is, it would just be based on usage, so they could get a copy of the bill now and a copy of the bill later to show usage change, a possible usage change.
We could make that part of the review in terms of at least a cursory to verify the usages are as they were identified at the beginning.
Okay.
I don't see a reason why not.
We would address that in the order.
Mm-hmm. At the order time, not right now.
So I'd move to adopt the decision regarding a development criteria and the staff report prepared for and presented to the Story County Board of Adjustment.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to adopt the decision regarding the development criteria in the staff report prepared for and presented to the Story County Board of Adjustment. Roll, please.
Scarlett?
Aye.
Kielmeyer?
Aye.
McGill?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye. Okay, then we come to the part of the order which it looks like we're fairly clear with the addition of a condition, single condition that might go out. I don't know whether we... Two growing seasons makes a lot of sense, if you will. I don't know whether we want to put a criteria in that regard or just say 2 years down the road or open to...
In the order, don't we have two conditions, really? Inspection, also the wastewater.
If we make that part of the condition, that there will be a review done by staff that will include both the use of it as a warehouse, I don't want to say warehouse, a processing facility, and to the use of the wastewater systems. So I think that could actually be one.
Okay, then I'd move to approve conditional use permit as proposed by the applicant in case CUP 01-14, as discussed by the Zoning Board of Adjustments and in the staff report prepared for and presented to the Story County Zoning Board of Adjustments, finding that all applicable standards for approval will be satisfied on the conditions listed below, with the exception of the condition that the facility be reviewed within 24 months.
Mm-hmm.
To meet the requirements of the Board of Sanitation and to ensure that the purpose as submitted is being met.
And reduce traffic.
We still have the accessible spaces marked on site. That's still there.
As well as be sure that all required accessible spaces shall be marked on site.
Now we get it. Okay. Do we get a second?
Second.
We've got a motion and a second to approve the conditional use permit as proposed by the applicant in case CUP 01-14, discussed by the Board of Adjustment and in the staff report presented to the Story County Board of Adjustments, along with the conditions of reviewing the property within 24 months associated with both the use and the wastewater use that was there, along with the signage for the accessible parking lot. Roll, please.
McGill?
Aye.
Scarlett?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
Kielmeyer?
Aye.
And approved. Okay, we will now move on to CUP, another conditional use permit, CUP 02-14, Wolfocule. Did I do okay? Who's ever out there in the audience? Okay, Wolfocule, conditional use permit for a storage site for drying agricultural lime. We'll turn it over to staff.
Good evening. I just have a few slides, as this is basically your third conditional use permit. I won't go over the standards for approval in great detail and leave it open for questions towards the end. As stated, it's for a lime storage area. It will be surrounded by a berm and contain a lay-down area for drying the lime. It's approximately 3 acres in size. It also is proposing a 7,500 square foot shop that will be used for storage of the lime and the equipment. Access, you'll see shortly in the site layout, is proposed along an existing drive along 190th. And then the site in year one will contain 150,000 tons of lime and then 28,000 tons each year thereafter. That lime is coming from the City of Ames water treatment system. And attached to the staff report was the materials from the City of Ames defining the type of lime and the drying, etc. This map reflects the surrounding property owner notifications that were sent out, and I actually are a little bit different than the other two. I have yellow hatch lines for those properties, that are under consideration tonight, and those in orange are the properties within quarter mile that received notice of the Planning and Zoning Commission and the Board of Adjustment meeting. You've seen the standards of approval several times, so I'll breeze through these next two slides. I did want to just note through the analysis that was in the staff report, staff noted, in particular to traffic and parking and loading, that there was some concern voiced at the Planning and Zoning Commission from a neighboring property owner as well as the county engineer as to the manner in which trucks and traffic would enter and exit the site. And based on the comments of the applicant's engineer at the Planning and Zoning Commission, where it was stated it would be limited to right-in, right-out situation, I just wanted to make sure that that was further defined in the staff report for the Board of Adjustment as it is a recommended condition of approval by staff. Does anyone have any questions? I think generally everyone understands what a write-in and write-out is. This example I have does include a median. Obviously, along 190th, there's not a median, but a raised median, but it does demonstrate the operation of a write-in, write-out. Again, I'd say the burden of persuasion is on the applicant to demonstrate that all standards for approval have been satisfied to the Board of Adjustment. This is a site plan submitted by the applicant. If you look, the darker lines on the right-hand side of the screen, right in here, this is the bermed-in area. So this would be where the product would initially be taken, and then as it's laid out to further dry, it goes further to the north, and then you can see the building up here. And then the primary entrance is off right up here along 190th. We did run this through normal interagency review as well, and the county engineer, Darren Moon, did note a couple things. He did want to make sure that if they intend to widen the existing drive, they will need to get a driveway entrance permit through the county engineer's office. But then he also noted some concerns about tracking mud out of the pavement, or out onto the pavement of 190th, and then you'll see how this is addressed through a recommended condition of approval. Dave Swanson at the assessor's office noted that it's currently assessed as an agricultural use, but in 2015 that assessment classification will be reviewed. I think it's just putting the applicant on notice that their property assessments and valuations may change. And then again, Margaret James with Environmental Health did question whether the shop would generate any wastewater. It's our understanding, and was mentioned at the Planning and Zoning Commission, at this point there are no restrooms planned on the facility, and so there would be no need for on-site wastewater treatment at the site. Again, as say in the past two, general or notification letters went out Wednesday, March 26th, and publication was on Thursday, March 27th in the official newspapers. The Planning and Zoning Commission recommended this to you all and had us placed on your agenda for today. And on the screen are three recommended conditions of approval if you would so see fit to approve the conditional use permit today. Number one, prior to action on a zoning permit by the Board of Supervisors, if the driveway is proposed to be widened, submit an approved driveway entrance permit from the Story County Engineer. Number two, that the entrance exit to the site for truck traffic be limited to right-in, right-out movements. And number three, a plan to address mud from the site tracked onto the county road shall be submitted to and accepted by the county engineer prior to action on a zoning permit by the Board of Supervisors. I really quickly want to explain the process to you. I'm not proposing that we tie it to conditional use permit issuance. There's another step beyond this for construction of the building, and that is an issuance of a zoning permit by the Board of Supervisors. That's a quick turnaround, a week or 2 weeks, to get that through the process. But that will allow the applicant, between the issuance of the conditional use permit and prior to applying for the zoning permit, to get this additional information defined.
Basically, your indication there is that does not necessarily have to be a condition and that there are other processes.
No, I think these are the three recommended conditions of approval. But generally, you see it prior to issuance of a conditional use permit, and I changed it up a little bit on you this time. And these are your four alternatives. I do want to apologize in the staff report. I failed to change these to Board of Adjustment and called you all the Planning and Zoning Commission. Yeah. I'm like that, you know. I do have some site shots. These were attached to staff reports, or some pictures. These were attached to the staff report as well. The applicant's engineer did provide these. These are the existing operation of the City of Ames. They're dated, but they were submitted by Mr. Renault to give a sense on how much dust may be generated. And so this, you'll see very minimal dust with the mixing, so the turning over and through the drying process. And then this is what the stockpiles look like in their existing shelter. And then the sludge drying. And are there any questions? I went into greater detail on traffic and truck traffic in the staff port. I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Yeah, and I just wanted to kind of verify, make sure that I understand the data that you gave. The current traffic reports, if you will, the council on Dayton says it's 4,210 vehicles a day, right? That's what I get out of your report. Says that there are going to be 6,000 truckloads in year one, which I assume if that was metered out through the year, that would be 50 weeks, maybe a couple weeks off, 5 days a week, maybe four more trucks per day.
Yeah.
Talking about for impact on year one?
Well, we made the assumption of 300 work days per year, which is about what you're saying, too.
We're not very far off, but we're dealing with the fact that on the road there would be four or five or four to
well,
six
year
more
one,
trucks.
Year one,
right, one
will be about 20 more, actually. Subsequent years drops to 3 to 4.
Still 20 out of 4,210, right?
Right.
Making sure that we're talking about the right numbers. Okay. Because after that, it becomes somewhat inconsequential.
The reason the contract, as you probably noted as you read it through the staff report, the year one, there's a greater amount of line to be taken out of the existing ponds to get the volume down. The immediacy is near for this as they go to the reconstruction of the new water plant. They need to get the line out of there. But then that immediacy lessens, urgency lessens as you go to year two.
Was there any discussion concerns, runoff, water runoff, environmental concerns with this?
Keith Morgan with the Surrey County Emergency Management Coordinator did come down and talk to me earlier this week, maybe later last week. I think the berm, at least where the stockpile is on the south end of the property, will help alleviate. It does generally drain to the south, southeast to the interstate, and the interstate, in some sense, acts as a buffer there from uses further east. There was some concern mentioned by Keith with the existing conservation park immediately east. I can't think of the name of that. But he did talk to Mike Cox, our Surrey County Conservation Director, and Mike never, the way it was left, Keith said that Mike would contact me if he had concerns, and Mike never did contact me.
The nature of these operations, you go through the chemistry, and it's creating calcium oxide, and it wants water. So it will absorb most of the water that comes to it. That's the very nature of what they're trying to do. It's most of these kind of operations have been determined to be relatively benign in terms of what they're doing, as long as you control the dust, and they've been able to do that. I've been around the site back behind the water plant, and there's no evidence around there that there's been any ongoing issues associated with ambient. The stuff just wants to suck water up. It just really wants it. So
the applicant, I'm sure, will address the types of permitting and discussions they've had with the DNR as well.
Why is mud on the road a concern?
When you come down the hill on 190th, it's an intersection with Interstate 35, and I think, and speaking for Darren, My understanding would be that there's a potential for a conflict. It might be slick, it might be a hazardous road, whatever, given the location, proximity to that intersection with the interstate, and coming down off the interstate ramp.
Thank you.
It's fair to say that there have been no indications, at least on the application.
And the applicant may be able to provide, saying they're graveling or rocking the entrance and exit and back into the site.
Burns, questions for staff? Okay, thank you. Do you have someone to speak for the applicant this evening? Come to the podium and address, identify yourself, please.
Lee Wolfcool, representing Wolfcool Injection. As far as the mud on the road, there shouldn't be any mud because we would not be able to get into the fields because of semis. They wouldn't be able to get around the mud. But if there was any dirt or mud brought out, we are going to be rocking and graveling the road going back a quarter of a mile, so that should minimize any of that. And if there was something dropped off the truck, we are always out cleaning them up. We've been doing this for the last 5 years out here. And if there is any address, even if we drop line sludge off the truck, we usually stop to pick it up. So, as far as right in, right out of the property, that's the way we're doing it. We're coming off of Dayton, turning right on E29 there, and entering the field to the right. And as we leave, we'll be taking a right and get on Interstate 35 coming back. So there's no problem with that. And as far as widening the driveway, yes, if we end up doing that, and we most likely will, just because it would be safer, we will apply for a driveway entrance permit. So that way we don't have to cross over into the other lane of traffic, is what I'm seeing. But it's been working out all right, but we do have to cross into the other lanes, so you got to watch traffic. Yes, we've been taken there. Leanne advised me, since as big as the project is and we're putting up a building, that she'd like to put a conditional use permit on it. Otherwise, A1 was allowed for doing a line in, line out. It was just a bigger scale.
So you have any concern with the 6,000 trucks in the first year as opposed to...
We are actually taking half of the loads past there anyway right now. I mean, we head out north, so part of that 4,200 loads a day, we're already probably included in that. We're just doing a shorter distance instead of going further out.
We talked a little bit, just trying to understand your business. We talked a little bit about the drop-off, the 6,000 trucks,
about
the stuff that leaves the site.
What we're doing is, for instance, we're bringing, on a ratio standpoint, we bring three semi-loads in, dry it down, it turns into one semi-load dry. It reduces our trucking costs instead of hauling moisture away. If we haul 20 miles away, at least we're not spending all that fuel and time hauling moisture. So we're trying to stockpile it, and it's also a time thing. They need to get this done this summer so they can put their water plant up and utilize their lagoons. So the only way to process that much tonnage is to buy a piece of property.
Right, the loading process for loading the semis on the way out, what's that?
We'd load it with a payloader into a trailer, a semi-trailer, and haul it out just like it was hauled in. It just being a dry form instead of a wet form.
I've seen the results of the lime being delivered out here in the fields, that sort of thing. So that's wet at this point in time when you're delivering it?
Yes, it's wet. It'll probably only stack up. I'm getting it to stack about 12 to 15 foot tall at most. If we stack it any higher than that, it avalanches down. So hence the reason we're doing a 3-acre berm. And that berm is already placed, and the DNR was notified. I dealt with them. They asked for a 4-foot berm around and not located in a flood zone. So before I bought the piece of property, I was talking with them. And I deal with this line of work all over state Iowa, biosolids. So the DNR is well, they know me well. So.
All this for the right reasons, right?
Yeah. Well, I like to stay on the good side, too. So. What was I going to address? Had a brain fart. I guess if you have any questions for me, I can answer them.
Any other questions for the applicant right now? Okay. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Any?
Oh, the septic, no, but that's a good point. The septic and restrooms, I do plan on bringing water in and electricity for power washing our trucks or the tractors, equipment off. We're not going to be producing any wastewater, though. That water just more or less be run on the berm. That's what I was going to get at. All the way around the 3-acre pad that we're going to be drying on, and also the berm that's holding the wet stuff, we're going to be feeding that down to grass, so that'll act as a buffer. Also, going over to anybody's property. There, as far as runoff, the lime is a soil conditioner, so it's good for the soil. You just don't want it to get into streams to kill fish, which would raise the pH. That would be the only issue, which that won't happen where it's located. And restrooms, we don't need them. We're not using them down at the water plant now. If we have to go to the restrooms at lunch, we go to the restrooms, or the guys hop in the truck and go. So, wasn't really any use for a septic or a well out there.
Much appreciated. Do we have any comments from the public this evening on this conditional use permit? Okay. Hearing none, then, we will close and begin deliberations on CUP 0214, the conditional use permit for storage site for drying lime.
Move to adopt the findings of fact and the staff report prepared for and presented to the Story County Zoning Board of Adjustment.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to adopt the findings of fact and the staff report prepared for and presented to the Story County Board of Adjustments. Roll, please.
McGill?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
Scarlett?
Aye.
Fielmeyer?
Okay, we've had a number of questions, and I think that we've got three conditions to consider as we get down to the actual part of the order. But does anyone have any concern with the six criteria that we've read through a couple times this evening? Any concerns with the development criteria, then the five that follow that we need to feel like we need to address at this point?
No concerns that can't be addressed with conditions.
Okay. I'd ask for a motion.
I move to adopt the decision regarding the development criteria in the staff report prepared for and presented to the Story County Zoning Board of Adjustment.
Second. We've got a motion and a second to adopt the decision regarding the development criteria and the staff report prepared for presented to the Story County Board of Adjustments. Roll, please.
Fielmeyer? McGill?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
Scarlett?
Aye.
Then we come down to the actual statement of the order, and I believe that we've got, if I can look them up here, three conditions that have been proposed by staff and that we have talked about.
They're on the screen, too.
There we are. The three that are on the screen.
And they are not included in the draft EMO.
Any concern with this criteria that was stated up here? I'm sure there's no sense rereading the people at this point in time.
Move to approve the modification as proposed by the applicant in case CUP 02-14 as discussed by the Zoning Board of Adjustment and in the staff report prepared for and presented to the Story County Zoning Board of Adjustment, finding that all standards of approval will be satisfied with the conditions as outlined on the screen.
Second.
We've got a motion and a second to approve the modification as proposed by the applicant in case number CUP 0214, as discussed by the Zoning Board of Adjustment and in the staff report prepared for and presented to the Story County Board of Adjustment, that the standards of approval will be satisfied along with the conditions, three conditions, that have been identified as part of this hearing. Roll, please.
Scarlett?
Aye.
McGill?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
Fielmeyer?
Thank you very much. We will now move on to a variance. We're going to change the tone here as we go down that. We have a Verbano variance to a front setback requirement. Turn it over to staff.
All right, as you had mentioned, this is the Verbano variance request, the property owner being Orvel Verbano. Location of this property, it's at 3403 Cameron School Road. The size of the parcel is 0.75 acres. Current zoning in place on the property is A1 agricultural. Looking at the land use framework map designation, it is designated as rural transitional residential. And the request is for a variance to Section 86.04 to allow an addition to a single-family dwelling with a front setback of 39 feet. Section 86.04 does require a front setback of 50 feet for the A1 zoning district. Surrounding property owner map here above, you can see the property very small here. Located, this is the Squaw Valley subdivision, the new Bella Woods subdivision, the Ainsley Free Church, and Golf and Country Club, Cameron School Road right here, and again, the 0.75 acre parcel and the yellow hash mark. Then looking over just a combination of the findings of fact and some of the other applicable information associated with the request. First of all, the subject property is inside the A1 zoning district. It has been there since the implementation of the zoning in Story County in 1958. Zoning permit number 22 was issued for a single family dwelling on March 31st of 1964. At the time that that building permit was issued, the property was described as a southeast quarter of the northeast quarter, which was a 40-acre parcel. On April 30th, 1976, the southeast and the northeast, except the subject property as described, was transferred by a warranty deed. Staff did note that this was the first mention of the 1-acre parcel subject to the right-of-way. With the adoption of the new zoning ordinance in 1977, the minimum lot size for the A1 zoning district did change from a 1-acre minimum to a 35-acre minimum. However, the single-family dwelling on this property was considered a farmstead, and that is still carried on by current definition, farmstead being defined as a farmstead that was in place prior to 1977, more or less grandfathering in all those 1-acre lot sizes that were in place. Kind of where this 1-acre parcel as it was transferred got knocked down to a 3/4-acre parcel was on December 28th of 1981, where Story County actually purchased 1/4 acre of right-of-way from this property, which ultimately did decrease the size of the subject property from 1 acre to 0.75 acres. After that time, a zoning permit was issued for a single-family addition on the subject property on June 12th of 1984. In May of 1985, the property was transferred to Mr. Urbano, and the legal description on this deed did include the right-of-way that had been purchased by Story County. The legal description, as you can see on the staff report, it does kind of give a meets and bounds description of the exact location, and then on the end it does say subject to right-of-way. That's what it was defined as before the county purchased the right-of-way, and that what it was defined as after the county purchased the right-of-way. It's kind of weird how that happened, but it's probably a mistake that happened a long time ago, and it's just never been addressed as the property has yet to be transferred since that 1985 date. Then again, there was another zoning permit that was issued for a single-family addition on the subject property in 1992, and we did note that currently Section 86.04 does require that a farmstead severed from a farm to have a front setback of 50 feet and to carry a minimum net lot area of 1 acre. Looking into some of the reasons for the variance, according to the appellant, there is electrical, a ground source heat pump, septic, and water lines, as well as grading and drainage issues, and mature trees that prevent this addition to be placed in either the side or rear lots. Staff note that the subject property is located at the southeast edge of the Bella Woods subdivision, which is directly adjacent to the Squaw Valley subdivision. The property is classified as a residential parcel, and there are 43 single-family dwellings located within 1/4 mile of this property. Closest one is approximately 125 feet east of this single-family dwelling. The applicant did note stuff about the assessed value of the current dwelling. We did note that the average assessed dwelling value of the 43 homes is approximately $168,000, while this subject single-family dwelling is at about $109,000, so well below what that average would be for the area. Staff did note that the parcel is relatively flat, but it does drain from the east to the west. And the A1 zoning district is in conformance with the Ames Urban Fringe Plan. The LDR, the Land Development Regulations, it does allow for a single-family dwelling as a principal permitted use in the A1 district. In the case of the subject parcel, they need to be placed on a minimum of 1 net acre. When the subject property was first created, it was placed on 1 acre of land. However, after the purchase of that quarter acre of right-of-way by Story County, the parcel became 0.75 acres in size. Since that time, Story County has issued 2 zoning permits for single-family dwelling additions. Staff did note that they believe these 2 permits were issued in error, noting that the reason for the error is more than likely tied to the fact that the legal description was never changed to reflect the right-of-way purchase by Story County. So with that, if the Board of Adjustment is comfortable moving forward with this variance, staff does recommend that the minimum lot size issue does get corrected. To correct the issue going forward, we would recommend that the zoning of the property be changed from A1 to R1. We did note that the property is adjacent to the R1 zoning district on its west and north sides, and the 43 single-family dwellings located within a quarter mile of the subject property, 36 of those are in the R1 zoning district, so a vast majority of them. The R1 district would require a 40-foot front setback, and again, this application, the appellant is seeking a 39-foot setback. And the second option would be to seek a variance to the minimum lot size requirements of the A1 zoning district to allow the current use to continue in conformity on the 0.75 acres. Hopefully I've kind of summarized everything there above, especially with the minimum lot size issue, but the alternatives are on the screen here above, and as I'm sure there will be questions with this one, I would be happy to answer them at this time.
There was lots of nuances in this one.
Mm-hmm. Out of my curiosity, when Story County bought the right-of-way, what side of the lot did they diminish?
It would be the south side of this lot.
Yeah. South side of the lot. So yep. Prior to Story County buying that right-of-way, the property would have been in compliance with the 50-foot. Is that?
Yeah, and... the property was probably always considered 1 gross acre, 0.75 net. However, looking back at how we defined lot sizes in the past, I'm not sure. Right now, we define lot sizes based on the net acreage, not the gross acreage. However, in the past, I'm not sure we did that. And I'm not sure we started doing that. If I remember, I think the first mention of the net lot size was in 1992. So, again, with that 1 acre being transferred, you can assume when they did transfer that, they did that to be in conformance with the regulations that were in effect at that time, and they were. And, again, over time, things have happened that have just diminished the size of that lot. The way that the definition has changed, no. Yeah.
Right away, what is it, like 33 feet or something?
On this one, I'm not sure the exact distance of the right away that... I can get you actually the dimensions of the right away that was purchased. Give me a second here. No, it was outright, it was a conveyance. Yeah, that doesn't happen all that often. For the most part, it is just usually an easement that the county does own. However, my assumption would be back in 1981 that there was some upgrade done to Cameron School Road, and a lot of times when you have upgrades to the road, they actually purchase the right-of-way instead of getting it. And, you know, going through the actual warranty deeds that were issued on the right-of-way conveyance, it looks like, and Mr. Bravano, the current owner, wasn't involved in this, but it might have been... Yeah, it's the south 50 feet of the parcel, but there is a mention on one of the deeds that leads me to believe there's just a mention on here. It says exempt 428A.2 eminent domain, so I'm not sure exactly how it was purchased or the reason for it was purchased, but it appears that there might have been some conflict between the county and the landowner at the time. Again, I'm not sure. I wasn't around in 1981. So.
Your comments indicated that Story County bought the right-of-way, but they apparently didn't record it or didn't.
No, it was recorded, but then when the deed transfer happened after that, the legal description, in my opinion, should have been updated to reflect the purchase of that right-of-way, and it wasn't. I mean, the legal description said subject to right-of-way, so, you know, I could see where maybe it was carried forward. I know today if it was to be...
Figure out whether the county carried through with the things they should have carried through, you know...
Yeah.
what the status today is, regardless of the status back in 19... Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, the purchase of the right-of-way was documented, it was signed, it was recorded in 1981, so everything was done to par there. It was just...
You do have a documentation trail that would tend to support that.
Yep.
I look at this legal description that's in this report, subject to road right-of-way. To me, that means easement.
Mm-hmm.
Outright conveyance, it's except road right-of-way. And, I mean, that's the word that is meaningful to me. Mm-hmm. But this description, I mean, I could see how the current property owner might have gotten that, because my bet is that the abstractor never caught that.
Right-of-way, yeah.
That would probably be, to me, that's what that is.
And I would trust your opinion over mine on that as well too. But, but yeah, there was just somewhere in the 1980s there was an error that was made and it was carried forward and you know, it was something that honestly when we started reviewing the variance about a week and a half ago, it kind of popped in that we noticed something was up and we went through and pulled some stuff and kind of was able to maybe track exactly where the error took place and why it took place and at least understand what the mindset might have been at that time. But
we really have two choices. We have number one, we have a legally existing non-conforming property, which historically we've said that these can be allowed so long as the non-conformity does not been compromised any further than what it was. Or the workaround is to consider an alternative zoning. Assume along with the criteria that we stick with the 40 feet and not the 39 as requested. Is that?
Yeah, and I've discussed this with the appellant a little bit and kind of gave some options there, and we were talking about maybe pulling the variance request and just going for the rezoning. I know they have some time constraints that they're worried about to get this addition built. But he did indicate that the 40 feet would be possible to meet instead of the 39. So if it was, that'll be something that you'd want to ask him just to double check on that. But it does seem like that is an option. But you know, Leanne and I kind of have discussed this one a lot, and I think kind of what we led off to assume was that, you know, this variance for the front setback, if it does meet the criteria, we're okay moving forward with this, just with the condition that the lot size issue does get taken care of. Between the rezoning and the variance, you know, I think from a staff standpoint, we're pretty comfortable that there is a reasonable alternative to get that complied with and to get that nonconformity fixed, and probably at a high success rate too. So going forward, I'm not sure we're too worried about that. But again, we've issued building permits for additions on this parcel in the past when it didn't meet the minimum lot size. So there's been an assumption, I think, going forward that the lot is in conformance because we were issuing permits and we're now finding out that there might be an issue.
I can't remember an instance where we've been asked to consider changing the zoning. Is that something that's within our purview?
No, the Board of Adjustment wouldn't be the one who ultimately changes zoning. That's a recommendation by the Planning and Zoning Commission to the Board of Supervisors.
I just don't remember that coming through in this way, but this is a different sort of a...
There was one instance. There was the Superior variance, if you recall that one, off North Dakota, where he was seeking a variance to the minimum lot size, and I think the Board of Adjustment at that time said, no, we're not comfortable with the variance, you should seek a rezoning instead, which is ultimately what he did. And
well, if you were to come back around, what kind of a time frame
would you be? The variance, if it were approved this evening, again, in the case that it was approved, you know, we're looking typically at a quick turnaround at that point where they could get building permits. There is that 30-day appeal process that we always do warn the applicant of, but if they want to move forward, it's kind of moving forward at your own risk sort of thing. Rezoning, we're probably going to push this out to the end of June almost with all the notifications that we have to do for rezonings and then the two meetings that they have to attend. So, yeah, there is a big addition to time with that.
Okay, thank you. Any comments from the public?
Are we not on this one, no.
I would ask for the applicant to please address, come to the podium and identify yourself.
Good evening. My name is Orville Burbano. I'm the applicant. Been there since 1983, I believe. The road looks kind of straight when you were discussing about the 1 acre, 3/4 acre. It looks straight, but there were times I kind of asked, is the right-of-way half of this the road, which typically is assumed, but I guess the road kind of bends inward towards the property. So I think that's where it's gotten smaller. And I don't know about, you know, the how it was transferred or anything. So I mentioned that in the back, in the north side, there's a heat pump septic system in that area. So the builder says that's not the place to put it. On the west side, there's electric lines and the septic system that goes around there, so that's not the place to put it. Instead of building a whole straight train that he said, the builder says wouldn't look so good, this is the best option for the building and the aesthetics and that kind of thing.
Now, when we talk to staff, they've indicated that they have talked to you about the...
Yes, sir.
And, forward, are you willing to comply with that 40-foot requirement?
Yes, sir.
Having said that, sometimes we have had applicants come to us, because you're right, there's an interpretation of where is the edge of the road, where is this and that, and they've actually found out that things are better than they thought because they got an official survey. Are you intending to do something like that to make sure where that spot is, rather than to assume?
From the very beginning, there's always been two stakes in all the four corners, actually, of the property. So it's still there. We could remeasure again, but I believe we're pretty comfortable with the 40-foot setback. That it would...
The board reiterates the criteria of 40-foot. You're confident that you can go forward?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. The builder just wants to, you know, make sure that decision's made, and so he can order material and get going on the project. We're looking at trying to be done by the end of June, actually. So. An extra room. He hasn't finalized it since we're trying to determine, you know, all these different things. But we're trying to re-roof the house. And so he said that the best time to do an addition would be that time so that it could be incorporated properly. Bedroom or some type of multi-purpose room.
I'm kind of from your perspective. I mean, why is a rezoning not acceptable? The additional at 60 some days, probably.
Cost. While we're waiting, you know, the price of material, time through the season. We were thinking we were going to take a vacation, so we were going to be gone for a while after that, and we're just trying to get this done. Actually, we've been discussing with the builder for a while, and so I can't remember when that was turned in. I think earlier last month, finally. No, it's never been a rental property. We've owned it. We've moved out to a different residence, but the kids have lived on and off in there. They're through college now, finally. Well, they're both moved out now, so we thought, you know, we'd like to... I know the value thing Charlie mentioned in there. It looks like, I don't know how it's described in the assessment thing, but there's only two bedrooms in that main area, actually.
Questions? Okay. Do we have anyone from the public that would like to speak to this case at this point?
Okay. Then hearing none, we will close the case VAR 01-14 for purposes of deliberation. Process question for staff at this point in time. I mean, we've got findings of facts, we've got a decision on the legal principles. If we decide to go with the changing the zoning of the property and adopting the 40-foot setback for the purposes of this addition, does that happen at the time of the order? Or is that something that we have to document further as part of the decision?
I think I would probably be comfortable just adding a finding of fact that stated that at the hearing the applicant noted that they could comply with the 40-foot setback instead of the 39.
Make the rezoning part of the order.
It's kind of a condition, yeah.
I want to make sure I have the process.
Do we make that part of the condition, or do we reject the variance request and send it back to planning and zoning?
Yeah, and again, I think from our standpoint, we're comfortable going forward with the variance. And again, this is completely up to the board, but you rejecting the variance request is going to put the time crunch on the appellant that they're not going to be able to meet that.
But if the decision is that we think it should be rezoned, we can do that.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I heard.
Yeah, I mean, you're issuing a variance to front setback for the A1 zoning district. So while it's in its A1 zoning district, the 50-foot requirement stands. However, they can start construction at the 40 feet, and then once the rezoning process starts, at that point it'll eventually kind of catch up with itself and the variance will no longer be needed. But it'll give the appellant at least that time to start construction at the 40 feet.
So our condition could be for a 40-foot setback with an A1 with the condition that it be rezoned.
That it be rezoned, yeah, and then I guess upon the rezoning.
Allow them to start construction, and yet.
Because they would have that.
Okay.
With the condition that the property become rezoned.
All right.
That's what I wanted to make sure. I didn't get the cart before the horse and vice versa. Okay. Okay. With that being the case, it looks like we might have something to add to the findings of fact. The applicant indicated they could do this adjustment with a 40-foot setback, this addition.
Okay, with the addition that the applicant agreed that they could do the addition with a 40-foot setback.
Okay. And that would actually just the factual part before we do the rest. Do you have a motion?
Second.
We have a motion and a second to adopt the findings of facts in the staff report prepared for and presented to Story County Zoning Board of Adjustment, along with the indication that the applicant had indicated that they could complete this project and this request with a 40-foot setback. Roll, please.
McGill?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
Scarlett?
Aye.
Steelmeyer?
Aye.
Then we come on to the decision, and since we're on a variance at this point in time, the legal principles that we have to deal with is the finding of an unnecessary hardship is in place, that granting the variance will not be contrary to the public interest, and that the spirit and intent of the Story County Development Plan and the Story County Land Development Regulations are protected. Do we have any concerns, over those legal principles?
I will tell you that I'm really not altogether that comfortable adopting this particular decision. I don't think that the finding related to an unnecessary hardship has been made. And I guess I'd prefer to see this process proceed through rezoning just because I don't think that the justifications are there. That's kind of the way that I view it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Other comments?
I have a tendency to agree with that statement.
So if we move down that path, that would end up essentially moving this to a denial with the idea that the rezoning has to come first.
I just don't like the process. I mean, I don't like the way the process works with the conditions and sort of the after-the-fact rezoning. I mean, a variance is a pretty special and unique thing. And granting this, in light of our prior cases, to me at least, in my judgment, is not consistent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree with the thing, but I'm not sure that that's a very hard. I'm just the hardship of there. I understand time constraints and time. Listening to the applicant, I think time is nothing.
And I would have to say, I commend staff for trying to be user-friendly and trying to help and trying to make timeline possible. I mean, I think that that is an excellent example of staff trying to provide good customer service to the community.
Let's give applicants, could you come to the podium, please? I'd like to give you one last opportunity to address this issue of unnecessary hardship, to allow the board to understand, you know, why the completion of this project in June is so essential, as opposed to, let's just say, completing it in October.
Well, the carpenter keeps reminding that as the time goes, the price keeps going up, sir. We've looked at other options. I guess one thing we talked about is not being able to complete the project and not be able to do the project if, you know, the price changes too much. So we just end up with redoing the roof. He mentioned about doing something with the garage, but really, you know, then we end up with just that whole train idea, and which not very good. So that's why I guess I know Charlie had mentioned about the rezoning and all that, and I've kind of mentioned that we'd rather go through the process here with the variance and see if you folks would approve it. And,
so, where do you want to go on the motion then, from the board?
I understand his concern about, again, waiting for it, and his concern about building material going up. But I think there's a route. If it is rezoned, the project could go forward. Having said that, that gives him a route to go through, that if they're concerned about building material for us, it could be purchased now. I'm not sure that's that big a concern right now in the present environment. That's just an opinion. I think it needs to go through rezoning.
So I'm not hearing anybody on the board that's got overall concerns about the project, the merits of the project, the criteria for the project,
no.
But just in terms of the process that we're talking about. Is that a fair, fair sort of statement?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I just wanted to, I mean, voice my concern so that you would be aware that I would not be in favor of the proposal, but since it sounds like there may be others who join me, I guess I move to deny the decision as outlined in the staff report prepared and presented to the Story County Board of Adjustment.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to deny the decision as outlined in the staff report prepared and presented to the Story County Board of Adjustments, particularly in the regards of the finding of an unnecessary hardship and the necessity of rezoning prior to following through that actual process.
Can I ask again who made the motion, who was second? Sorry.
Motion, and I believe we had a second.
Charlotte?
Aye.
Steelmeyer?
Aye.
McGill?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye. So then our final order at this point in time, given our previous action, I presume would be to deny, or I could have that motion.
Move to deny the request as proposed by the applicant in case VAR01-14 is discussed by the Board of Adjustment and a staff report prepared for and presented to the Story County Board of Adjustment, finding that all applicable legal principles have not been satisfied.
Okay, we've got a motion and a second to deny the request as proposed by the applicant in case number VAR04-14. As discussed by the Board of Adjustment in the staff report prepared for and presented to the Story County Zoning Board of Adjustments, finding that all legal principles have not been satisfied. Roll, please.
McGill?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
Steelmeyer?
Aye.
Scarlett?
Aye.
So, as a note to the applicant, now would be your time to begin to rework with staff to start the processes that would allow you to move down the road towards the rezoning and the assuming the ultimate approval of the project. We will then move on to another variance, VAR02-14, a Christensen variance, that is to allow access by a 43-foot easement to more than one single-family dwelling. Yes, please.
As you mentioned, this is a Christensen variance request. The property owner is Kim Christensen, who is a registered agent for Mid-Iowa Construction Incorporated. Size of this parcel is approximately 18.28 acres. I shouldn't say approximately, it is 18.28 acres. The current zoning is A1 agricultural. The site is currently assessed as an agricultural use. The Ames River Fringe Plan does designate this property as natural areas. The request is for a variance to Section 88.04 to allow two or more single-family dwellings to take access off a common easement defining an excess of 43 feet. I just want to clarify what that does state there. That does not necessarily mean that this is a request to allow two new single-family dwellings, but by definition, the 50-foot is required when two or more single-family dwellings take access off something. The proposal right now, and the only thing that the land development regulations would allow is for one house on this parcel currently. So that is all the applicant is proposing at this time. The parcel in question, this parcel right here, the area known as Lot 4 is the pretty much this entire rectangular lot portion right here. The lot does include a small finger up here, however, that area is not included in the variance request. Onion Creek Lane, it is listed as Onion Creek Lane, but it actually is a privately owned access easement that just has a road name assigned to it. That is the area that we're looking at right here. That is the area that is 43 feet wide. From Onion Creek Lane, which ends about right here, there was a survey that was included with the application that does note that there is a 20-foot exclusive easement for this property right here. As that is listed as an exclusive easement, the requirement is only 20 feet because that is just providing access solely to that house, which again, if it's one single-family dwelling, it's 20 feet. When we do the two or more, that's when it gets to the 50 feet. So since Onion Creek Lane provides access to all these houses down here, and it will ultimately, if approved, be providing access to this lot right here, that access needs to be the 50 feet, which again, we only have the 43 feet, and that's been something that's been carried on for some time here, and I will get into that. But before I get into that, I just want to make sure that that portion of it's clear and everybody does understand what we're looking at.
Current time at 43 feet, Onion Creek Lane has provided access to several properties.
Yep, and just over time, it's almost stuff that's been grandfathered in before we had that 50-foot requirement, and hopefully I'll get into that here with some of the findings of fact, kind of bring that to light a little bit.
Well, let's bring this to light in the previous conversation, you know, where we're talking about structures and we're talking about conformance. So I'm assuming that we have a legally existing non-conforming easement.
Yep.
One time.
On the easement, yep.
So what bearing does that have on by not increasing the existing non-conformance?
By what bearing does that have on? Again, because the non-conforming language always says
about
that.
The structures, as opposed to a legally existing non-conforming easement at 43 feet, which we've said that we allow modifications that don't
increase the non-conformity.
How does that apply to this easement?
As it's an easement, I guess it's a little bit different of a question. The one thing I will state is that, you know, this property obviously right now takes access through that easement. However, it's not for the single-family dwelling. We're asking for it to be allowed from the single-family dwelling. Non-conforming use of land is covered in our ordinance, and again, I believe it probably does state the same thing that, you know, non-conformities are allowed to be there but not be increased in size. And does that... Leanne's looking at it right now, I know that. So does that include the non-conforming use of land, or is that just non-conforming structures that states that it should not be increased?
The title is non-conforming use of land, and then subsection A states no such non-conforming use shall be enlarged or increased or extended to occupy a greater area of land than was occupied at the effective date of adoption or amendment of the ordinance.
What you just said is not limited to structures. Is that?
We have, as Charlie said, we have non-conforming structures and we have non-conforming use of land.
We have a legally existing non-conforming land use. So
on the access width, yeah.
Which clearly we could not decrease that from 43 to 42. But it would appear that this would be similar to an additional tower as a structure that would not meet.
Yeah, and that... That's, I guess, how I would interpret that, and I think that's how we were interpreting it as we were going along. I mean, that you're not changing any portion of that access easement. It's just allowing an additional use onto that easement.
You'd have to recognize that as forward, obviously.
Yeah.
Okay. Just
assuming Leanne agrees with that, because, yeah, I think that's what we've kind of discussed with this variance throughout the... We've been working on this one for... nearly a year, it seems like.
Understand.
So anyways, let me kind of go over some of the findings of facts, and hopefully that'll provide a little bit more clarity to what we're looking at here. But the area of the subject property known as Lot 4, which is considered a woodlot that was first shown in Story County Transfer Book on March 5th of 1898. Yes, that year is right, 1898. So it's been there for some time, and it's awesome that we actually have records that go back that far. Subject property is in the A1 zoning district and has been since the implementation of zoning in 1958. The approximate 17.23 acres defined as Lot 4 is considered a legally established lot of record and as such is considered a buildable parcel under the bulk requirements of the A1 zoning district. Currently, access to the subject property is from North Dakota Avenue through a 43-foot-wide private access easement known as Onion Creek Lane, then through a 20-foot exclusive easement, keyword exclusive, from Onion Creek Lane to the southwest corner of this property. With the adoption of Story County's second zoning ordinance on December 22nd of 1960, regulations regarding required street frontage were first introduced to Story County. In that particular ordinance, it did state that no lot other than a lot of record shall be used for residential purposes unless such lot abuts on one public road or a private drive terminating on a public road for at least 40 feet. With the adoption of a new zoning ordinance in 1977, that street frontage requirement was changed to state that no lot shall contain any building used in whole or in part for residence purposes unless such lot abuts for at least 40 feet on at least one public street are unless it has an exclusive, unobstructed private easement of access or right-of-way at least 20 feet wide to a street, and there shall be not more than one single-family dwelling for such frontage easement, except that a common easement of access of at least 50 feet wide may be provided for two or more single-family dwellings. So that is the instance where we first see that two or more being the 50 feet. Now, over time, the language has kind of been massaged out a little bit, but it's still the same requirement overall. Probably one of the key facts to this case was that on July 14th of 1993, the Story County Board of Adjustment did grant a variance to the street frontage requirements for Parcel A and B. And if I can go back real quick, I'll show you those two parcels. Parcel A and B is this longer parcel here and this smaller parcel right there. But a variance was granted to parcels A and B in the northwest quarter of the northwest quarter in Franklin Township of Section 32. Parcels A and B were assessed through Onion Creek Lane. Parcel A, which is at 3711 Onion Creek Lane, had an existing single family built in year 1900, and parcel B, 3715, at the time was vacant, but since it's had a single family dwelling built on it in 1995. So what did happen there was that the dwelling that was built in 1900 was part of one parcel. They split off the smaller parcel, might have been the bigger parcel, but they did split it off to build a new house on that and did get a variance to both those two houses since they were taking access to Running Creek Lane, which again was under that 50 feet. Not too long after that, on September 2nd of 1993, this property was transferred to Mid-Iowa Construction Incorporated. And we did note that there are three other single-family dwellings that use Onion Creek Lane as their access to North Dakota Avenue, and that is 3703, 3701, and 3700 Onion Creek Lane. A property research report for parcel, the subject parcel, was requested on November 6th of 2013. It did state that the parcel was buildable on the area known as Lot 4. However, in an effort to be fair and consistent with previous decisions, Lot 4 would also need to receive a variance to the 50-foot, and it says 50 inches, but it's 50-foot access easement requirement before a zoning permit for a single-family dwelling would be issued. And currently, what is required in Section 88.04, I did provide the verbatim language on that. I won't go over that because, again, it's similar to what was there before, but it is how it reads today. We did note that Lot 4 is currently in about 91% forest reserve. It does contain about 75% floodplain. It does have an average corn suitability rating, or a CSR, of 47, and the total change in elevation on this property is about 26 feet. In talking with the applicant, there is kind of a building envelope area in that southwest corner that's outside of the floodplain, has pretty good elevation, and outside of that forestry reserve, and that's where they're looking to possibly put a single-family dwelling. And we did note that the property is located northwest of Ames in what would be considered the northwest growth area for the city of Ames. Looking within 1/4 mile of this property, there are 13 single-family dwellings, with the closest one being about 600 feet away, and the A1 Agricultural District is in conformance with the natural areas on the on the Ames Urban Fringe Plan. So hopefully I've kind of brought the facts to light, and hopefully there's a better understanding of this, and the alternatives are listed on the screen above, and with that, I will be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Clarification. Are we talking about one building lot back here, or are we talking about two?
Right now, as the property is, there can only be one house placed back there. There is an exception to the A1 zoning district called the residential parcel subdivision that they could do. However, you can't do that until after the first house is built. Then you are allowed to split that off and build a second buildable lot. However, the variance request that we're looking at today is only for the one, so if they were to do that, they would have to also come back for another variance request for that second house if they were to do that. As far as we know, and as far as I've talked with the appellant, there is only the intention to put one house there right now. But I do want to point out that the option would be available down the road to possibly put a second house.
Questions for staff? Okay. Thank you, Ron. Appreciate it. Who speaks for the applicant? If you come to the podium and introduce yourself, we appreciate it.
I'm Kim Christensen with Mid-Iowa Construction. And there's a long history with this property and how it evolved over time. And when we first got involved with the property in 84, our firm did, it was pretty reasonable to think that you could build a home there. We thought maybe down the road you might be able to build several homes, but I think as time has gone by, I don't think that's even in the cards. It really doesn't even fit with the character of the neighborhood. You know, it's more of individuals on small acreages and that sort of thing. So what we're really interested in doing is selling the property and selling it to somebody who wants to have an acreage in the country, in close to Ames. And so to do that, we really have to have it legally cleared that they can build a house there. And that's where the hardship comes in, is that with the changing of rules and regulations and other people who have built in the area and whatever, it is kind of boiled down that we've needed to get the variance on the 43 feet. That was kind of a shocker, because I didn't think that would be necessarily be the problem. But we have done a lot of surveying in the area, which is some of the first surveying that's been done with those lots, to come and make sure we get a certified survey platted so the buyer will know exactly what they're getting and how to get in and out of their property and that sort of thing. So that's really what the purpose is to make it so that the lot can be sellable to someone who wants to build a single-family house. And nothing more, really. Nothing more at all.
Questions for the applicant? Okay.
Thank you very much.
Oh, we have members from the public that would like to address. Please come to the podium and identify yourself.
Evening. My name is Todd Bertram, and I live at 3701 Onion Creek Lane. And in the discussion of the property width of the lane, one of the main issues in my mind is the fact that there isn't any discussion at all of what the actual travelable portion of the lane width is. And I had some photos that I took this morning. If you're interested in looking at those, I don't know if any of you've ever even been out there. But the lane itself, as it crosses the adjacent properties to either side where it's only 43 feet wide, is raised above the adjacent properties. And that raised portion is, if we're lucky, 17 feet wide. And so, in effect, you have a driveway. If you think of the driveway that approaches your garage, that's the width of the lane itself, the actual usable portion of that 43 feet wide. And so we have five homes now that access through that narrow driveway. I think it's about from North Dakota back to where it splits, it's probably about a quarter of a mile. Now, there are wider portions in the areas where it's flat, okay, but the major portion of that quarter of a mile is raised and is not really any way to widen that without bringing in a lot of fill to make that wider. So that would be one of my main concerns, is the fact that it's not a huge headache, but the more traffic that we have there, the more instances where we have to look across, it's kind of a valley, look across and see if anybody's coming and stop at the wide portion. If somebody is already advancing through that area, pull over to the extreme edge, stop in the wide portion, let them go past, and then continue on. whichever direction we're going. It happens the same way. The other question I would have is that there's been a variance issued once. I believe, and I don't know if there's any record of history, there's been a variance denied once in the past, within the last 10 years, 14 years. But I don't know that for sure. I don't know what the records show on that. The question comes up is, okay, the proposal now is for one house, but there are numerous other properties back in the area. How many more variances are going to happen? What's the limit? And I think that the statutes or codes, whatever, are written to establish some limit. And how many variances pile up on this before we say, okay, that's enough? So those would be my concerns. I guess the other one would be, it seemed like 1 week was a pretty short notice for this coming before this process. If it's been, it's been for sale for almost a year, and 1 week is leaves us a little bit tight on getting organized as to what the opinions in the neighborhood about this are. So that's all I have.
I asked the houses that are out there right now, has there been much turnover? I'm sort of interested in the marketability argument as it relates to hardship.
These kind of properties are very difficult to find, and when you find one, you don't move. I've lived there for 14 years, and there's been one change in ownership in the area in that 14 years. We have in the past somewhat tossed around ideas of possibly trying to pave it, and that leads to that widening, and it just doesn't seem to be, it's not economically feasible. The amount of fill that would be required just to maintain the elevation of what we travel on now would be, we didn't even get an estimate of what it would take, because that stretch that's raised is probably about half of that quarter of a mile, so an eighth of a mile that we would have to add on to the 17 approximately feet wide that's there now. And I don't know that we could build that up and not go beyond, because of the slope, we may end up going beyond the actual property line if we tried to do that. So that would be one of the concerns too. Sure.
Well, that's fine. I can see what we have here.
Yeah, that explains what this one is looking to. The residents are actually on the other side of this rise, and then the other photo is looking back towards North Dakota.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And these pictures, if you reference back to your map, I was about where. About in the middle where the sea is, so I was right about in the middle when I took the pictures in both directions.
Would you hand that to staff so that they have part of their record at this point in time?
Thank you for bringing it.
Yep. Anyone else that would choose to speak this evening?
Hello. Thanks for the opportunity to speak here this evening. My name is Joe Lynch. I live at 3700 Onion Creek Lane. My property is the one closest to the proposed lot 4. Well, first of all, I'd like to ask that seriously consider putting this off for the very reason that I only received notice of this mid-last week and have not had the opportunity to look into the details. I even misconstrued the nature of the variance request and didn't find out until I had found a few minutes to come to planning and zoning at noon today to understand more about the variance. I know at least one of the immediately affected neighbors works at this time of day and is unable to attend the meeting. So that's another issue. So I personally would like more time to look into the consequences of this variance and the impact it's going to have on our neighborhood and our lane. We used to own the lane collectively. I'm not sure actually who owns the lane right now, but that's not relevant here. But anyway, I have two additional concerns about this particular proposed variance, and first of all, the capacity of the lane is pretty much maxed out from my use of it. I've lived there almost 30 years, and we worked pretty hard collectively to keep it maintained and usable, but an additional house back there is going to add significantly more traffic. I mean, anyone who's going to spend over $200,000 on a piece of property, not to mention the access issues that go along with getting to build a house in this particular place. And I've got some problems with some of that as well, but that's not appropriate here today. Is not going to be a low-impact person. The average suburban household in the United States has 10 trips from their home per day. Okay, that's very reasonable to expect that in this case. That's another 10 trips, 20 more trips down the lane, in and out. This is not a small issue. The other issue, from my perspective, is the cost of improving the lane and keeping it up. In the year that this property has been for sale, no one has been in touch with me about any of these issues. I wasn't aware a zoning variance was being applied for until last week. I didn't even know one was required for use of the lane. So, and this 1993 variance was issued. I'm being very frank with you. I do not remember ever having been notified of that variance, but my memory could be flawed, but I'm telling you today that I do not remember that circumstance. There are significant issues here that someone is obviously hoping to gain financially from the sale of this property, and there's been no opportunity for me to discuss with anyone about the additional costs that are going to ultimately prevail to using and maintaining this lane, and who's going to share in that. Nobody said anything to me about any of that. And I think it's not a small issue. It certainly isn't a small issue for me. So, and in addition, the ones that Mr. Bertram brought up of the width of the lane, the additional difficulty of widening it is not a small problem. It's going to be very expensive if it has to be done. I see the whole thing as a problem. I'm not fond of the idea of building a house back there, not because I hate neighbors. I don't hate neighbors. That's not the issue. I think it's a crappy place to build a house. And I could go into that at length, but that's not the point here tonight. So I'd be glad to answer any questions you may have. About last summer sometime, as I remember. I mean, you have to ask the folks here, but I don't know. For sure.
Okay.
Thank you.
We give the applicant a chance for a closing.
We've owned that property for 30 years. So it's not a new property we're trying to come in and flip. We knew several of the people that were part of the original Environmental Brotherhood, which was the original group that bought the property from
Mesa Veranos, in which Joe is one. And the access to that property has been well known that this is the access. I have the access. If I want to raise hogs back there, I can raise hogs back there and bring trucks of hogs in there. So the access is there. It's not a matter of saying that you know that the road can't be used. It can. The problem is that we feel that we no longer would like to hold on to that property. We know the highest and best use for it is probably a residential home. It could be used for agriculture, and that certainly would be another alternative for us to pursue if this one was not, you know, allowed, or the neighbors didn't like the fact that there might be a $200,000 home in their neighborhood. So that part I don't quite understand. And the market, we set it on the market with the idea to see if there was any kind of an interest. There is interest. As Joe said, there's to have a beautiful piece of property like that right along the river is a pretty neat place. And it does have, in my opinion, a beautiful place to build on. Quite away from all the rest of the homes there. I don't think that one more single-family residence will make a huge difference on how much has been used there. I haven't used that access a lot because I haven't been back there very often. But if I did start to use the property, I'd be back there probably a little more and have the perfect right to do that. But I don't think one residence will make a difference. Eventually, the property, the whole area may develop. And then there'll be streets and all sorts of stuff in there at that point. I don't know. If they really want to maintain the character, I would think they'd love to see a 17-acre single-family lot. It's bigger than their lots, or some of their lots, anyway. And I think that the other lots, I mean. And I think that they would welcome the fact of having it as a one single family. And I'm not interested in building it. We have Mid-Iowa Construction, but we're not in the... We haven't built anything in many, many years, so you know that is not the interest that we have in that. So, it is kind of a tough deal because it was built under the old days, or developed under the old days of this contract that was divided, and that contract was divided up into four people, and one of the four people is who we bought their property. They had a house, plus they had this buildable lot that he was going to use to potentially build another property on. A fellow by the name of Sam Townsend. And his son committed suicide on the property, and he no longer wanted the property and really wanted to move from the area. And he traded for a show house, his house in this property. And that's how we came into the property. And we've held on to it ever since. So that's kind of the history of it. Since that time, there's been other properties that have been built and that sort of thing. So I don't know how else to use the property other than agricultural use unless we're somehow granted a variance for this 43 feet. You know, other 7 feet difference, huh?
Yeah, out there, did they precede or did they come after you bought this property?
Some of them preceded and some came after. And some of them had variances. I think in 93, like Karen said, there was a variance that was done. And the changing of the rules and the regulations a little bit, I think, presented that.
Accurate that you started marketing this property, like, last summer, is that right?
Last summer, but we knew that there would have to be a due diligence, you know. They would have, at the same time, I started doing the survey work and putting together to see just exactly what easements I had. I don't think anybody out there knows as much about the easements as I do, you know, who has what, because no one really took the time or the money to invest in trying to figure all of that out. And no, just trees, huh? Yeah. Occasionally there's a couple hundred that go out there. But.
Acceptable to an agricultural use out there?
Yeah, part of it's high enough. It used to be cropped. About 10 acres of it was cropped when we took it.
Floodplain is cropped. Yeah. There's actually a floodplain across 30% of the land?
Yeah. Part of it wasn't plotted. Yeah, the upper part was.
If you want to enter that in the record, you'll have to come to the podium.
Yeah. But he's right that the about of the 9 or 10 acres that were cropped, about four acres of that was in a floodplain, a lower area, and then the other 8 or 9 acres are completely in the floodplain, which is just heavily wooded, and part of it even goes into the creek.
Most you've got what? In terms of an agricultural use, 9 to 10 crop acres?
Depends how you use it. You could use the floodplain for pasture. And, the whole property could be used for those horses not very far from there. In fact, my property actually extends next to another horse pasture that's over there. So, yeah, there's several ways it could be used agriculturally. But it doesn't meet the neighborhood is residential. So, okay. Thanks.
Thank you. And we will close this case for purposes of deliberation.
Did he want to add?
I asked if he wanted on the record, we need to do it. But, couple questions for staff as we're going into deliberation. There was some assertion of time frames being short. Have we met the timelines that are required for notifications and the like? I just wanted to make sure that we got in the record of where we were. Another question that we have to remember, and this is maybe just a record for the board, whether this is a 17-foot road or a 25-foot road or anything else like that really isn't anything part of our determinations relative to land use. If the easement is there, that's the land use as we go down. The fact that someone chose to build a 17-foot road or a 25-foot road is irrelevant to the things that we have to do. So that's their choice, and it's something they've got to live with. Next question that I've got. As we explored a little bit before about the legally existing non-conforming land use, so we clearly have that's out there. That legally existing non-conforming land use, if one of the existing residents were to try to build an addition on their home, could they even do that if we determined that that was not the applicable criteria? Does the 50-foot come to them? If we determine that the 50-foot is the overriding criteria, is every resident that's out there now to be denied on any changes to their property? That's something that we have not explored. We're talking about the new use, but I'm talking about if we determine that this 43 is not the criteria, that the 50-foot is the criteria, have we now blocked all of the other landowners out there from ever doing anything to the property?
That's a very good point.
So we have some precedence for the legally existing non-conforming.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we've got clear precedence in action in the past, but you know we could deal. We've got an applicant that's asking to say that should be adequate to 43, but if we say no, the 43 isn't it. We're going to deny this because of the 50. Now we put the 50 criteria in place firmly, and we may now have restricted the land use rights of the existing other landowners in that area.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm quite uncomfortable with that aspect.
You know how I love to read some code. In the chapter on nonconforming uses, it addresses nonconforming structures, and it states where structure exists at the effective date of adoption or amendment of the ordinance, which cannot be built under the terms of the ordinance by reason of restrictions on area, lot coverage, height, yards, or other characteristics of the structure or its location on the lot, such structure may be continued so long as it remains otherwise lawful, subject to the following provisions. So that's where you're going to get at the size of the access easement. Letter A, where an existing structure or structures or parts thereof are not in conformity with the ordinance, no enlargement, alteration, or reconstruction shall be permitted which encroaches further into a required setback. So it says it can be continued. And then letter A specifically is to setback. And then letter B talks about if it's destroyed. So we don't specifically prohibit an addition. What we explicitly say, it cannot be allowed if it encroaches further into the setback. So in between the lines, I think they've established the use of the structure so that an addition would be able to issue a permit. We would.
That criteria is specific to setback and not to the development requirement, which is the 50 feet.
See, I interpret that as saying that if the structure is not altered, you're fine. If you alter the structure, you can't do that because it's not in conformance. Maybe I'm mishearing you, but...
The way it's been interpreted over the past variances and just staff and legal interpretations, if you have a structure that does not meet setbacks currently, we're going to use a hypothetical farmhouse built 1880. It's setback from the road 40 feet, does not meet the 50 foot front setback. They want to put an addition on. This allows them to put the addition onto a side that still would meet, at that point, meet the 50 foot setback, but not further encroach into that front setback. That's what this is saying. But to be honest, it's a question we've never been asked. And I can't stand here and tell you what additions have been issued out there or not. And if we've looked at it, I haven't delved into it to that degree.
I've become comfortable with the interpretation that's been applied about the increasing of the nonconformance, and we've generally adhered to that fairly closely as we've gone down through this. I think it was very pertinent what Leanne shared with us early on when we asked the question about legally existing nonconforming land use as opposed to legally existing nonconforming structures. I think that becomes somewhat important. But I think the principles are still similar. You know, I think the fact that we have a 43-foot easement is a legally existing nonconforming land use for which no one is asking to compromise that
right. In
this process. And so I think finding in the case of the applicant to have that be acceptable is at least most consistent. All of a sudden pull the 50-foot in and slap it over the top, I think adds more variation to future interpretations, and that would be a concern of mine.
Okay.
That's my perspective. Other conversations on the board? Things you want to talk about? Things you comfortable with or uncomfortable with? Well, if not, let's start working our way through. The first thing that we have to address is the findings of facts.
that have been presented by the board. If we have any revisions or changes to those, this will be the time to notate that.
I move that we adopt the findings of fact in the staff report prepared for and presented to the Story County Board of Adjustment.
Second. We have a motion and a second to adopt the finding of facts in the staff report prepared for and presented to the Story County Board of Adjustments. Roll, please.
Gill?
Aye.
Scarlett?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
Steelmeyer?
Aye.
Okay, on the decision, then, we need to deal with the aspect of the legal principles, and number one would be the finding of unnecessary hardship, that the land cannot yield a reasonable return if used only for a purpose allowed in the zone. The plight of the owner is due to unique circumstances and not to general conditions in the neighborhood. The use to be authorized by the variance will not alter the essential character of the locality. And then that granting of the variance will not be contrary to public interest and the spirit and intent of the Story County Development Plan and the Story County Land Development Regulations are protected. Do any of the board members have concerns about the legal principles?
I think that I can get to a finding of unnecessary hardship as it relates to this particular parcel, just based on the circumstances as the applicant has said, has stated them to us. As a practical matter, it's that vacant. And clearly, and I believe the idea that it would be hard to market this property unless there was a reasonable use for the property. It does not sound to me like it really realistically can be farmed. Maybe you can do certain things out there, but I don't think that any of those things are likely to be attractive to a buyer because there's no, good, decent return on that particular investment. And so I don't think I've got any problem with the unnecessary hardship problem, at least.
I agree with that statement. Looking at the way it's developed, you don't have access. So it's developed all the way around it.
Mm-hmm.
Quick question for staff, and again, this is protocol process as much as anything else. I believe in the cases in the past when we've got to this point of the legal principles that we have determined that the unnecessary hardship was not applicable because, and so in this case it would be not applicable because that this is a legally existing non-conforming land use and that we're recognizing that the 43-foot easement is acceptable. And that we're not encroaching on that. Is that essentially right? Whether we found that to be the case? Where do we get that document? I guess is my question.
If I recall,
is that at the point of the decision, or is that at the point of the legal principles?
I would say, and you would want to cover it in the decision here, in the second portion of it, stating that if that's the route you want to go, that you would say it in this portion.
Well, I think that's the part that has to be clear moving forward, because this is the first time that I recall dealing with legally existing non-conforming land use. It's usually been structures.
Mm-hmm.
And so we are indeed putting something out there that is a marker, if you will, for future. And I know I want to get that documented someplace. So if that's at the decision, I'm good with that.
What you're saying, there is no unnecessary hardship?
Well, that's what we've ended up doing in the case of the structure.
Right.
This one is a bit different. I think his comment about documenting that at the time of the decision, because that's going to apply to the future decisions, is probably appropriate.
And I, if I recall correctly, it's been always tied to the 1A, and I don't, I'm not sure about my
ordinance. That's the reasonable return. A1.
And now the A1. it will always be 1A. And that's the three-part test, the unreasonable hardship. And you've not
stated that the entire standard of unreasonable hardship has not been applicable, just that one, A1, is not applicable.
I agree with that. Somehow we need to nullify that A1. That's what it comes down to in order to move forward.
If I may, in hearing Vicki's argument, I think you, I'm going to speak for you, correct me. I think you have reached the conclusion to the other end that single-family dwelling may be the only reasonable use of the property.
I'm headed.
And given that reasonable return cannot be established absent the variance. Did I state that correctly, what your thought process is?
That I've heard, I think I can get there. Yeah.
And so in that case, you could reach a conclusion that that test is met, I think. Or in the case of a single-family dwelling already existing, encroaching further in a setback, that reasonable return has been established. Am I totally muddying the waters?
No, you're not. You've done a good job articulating that. I do think it's important we have multiple landowners that are dependent upon the single easement. You don't want to have to come back and revisit this again. And so that's why in the decision that I would like to make sure that we have the decision with the understanding that this particular easement is a legally existing non-conforming land use, because that will document that moving forward then, and not bring the 50-foot criteria back into determination at a future date. So I'm comfortable with having that be with the understanding at the decision level, and I think Victoria makes a good point relative to the hardship case. So we have a motion on the legal principles.
About whether or not the variance is contrary to the public interest. If we get hung up anywhere, I think that potentially is the area. And I don't, I mean, I appreciate the gentleman who brought the pictures to help us understand what the roadway and the actuality of access really is out there. That's helpful, and I don't want to discount that either. I would like to hear the wisdom of my colleagues.
I look at these, and you got a piece of property that if we deny this, he can't do anything with.
Really? Yeah.
I mean, that's really what it boils down to. Farmable? No, not back in there.
Mm-hmm.
My opinion. Developed on the other side of the river around it. Unless the county were to buy it for a park or something of that nature, and then you still have more traffic on it, you still have the lane access problem. So if you deny him access back there, you in essence have, he's got a landlocked piece of property.
And I agree with the land use. I have no concern with that at all. I don't necessarily agree with the lane. There's a 43-foot easement that is available to build a road, and the fact that somebody chose to put a 17-foot road in there is not the county's problem. I mean, that just is the reality of it. So I think that's beyond our purview in terms of determining whether that road, we don't say how wide roads ought to be. We say how much land you need to reserve for uses of that road, and that's it. I mean, there's no criteria for room. So I don't think we can stretch that to get it. I think that's beyond the regs.
Move to adopt the decision as outlined in the staff report prepared and presented to the Board of County Commissioners.
Excuse me, is there any possibility that I can add
Not at this point. We closed the hearing unless we have a specific question for you at that point in time. But if a, No, that's, as we said at the beginning, when we close that for deliberation, at that point in time, comments from the applicant or the public is only by being addressed by the board. So if the board has questions, the answer would be yes. But if the board doesn't have questions, we're not going to turn the podium over to you at this point in time. So I've got a motion on the table at this point.
Seconded.
We have a motion and a second to adopt the decision as outlined in the staff report prepared and presented to the Story County Board of Adjustments relative to the legal principles. Roll, please.
Stillmeyer.
Aye.
McGill.
Aye.
Scarlett.
Aye.
Miller.
Aye. So let me come to the order, having worked through this, and as I indicated to the board, that I do believe an obligation as we move forward. You know, we've heard some things about variances that may or may not have been granted, or et cetera, that it's kind of important to close the chapter in the book, if you will. And so I would really like to have whatever we go forward with to say with the understanding that the 43-foot, the existing 43-feet easement is a legally existing non-conforming land use, so that we don't have to address that piece of it again. Yes, if that is part of the basis for this decision.
Okay. Yep.
And like I said, I don't know that it's terribly germane to what we're doing now, but I believe it applies as we move forward.
Recognizing that the existing 43-foot easement is insufficient legal access under current regulations, we move to approve the request as proposed by the applicant in case number VAR0214, as discussed by the Board of Adjustment in the staff report, prepared for and presented to the Story County Board of Adjustment, finding that all applicable legal principles have been satisfied.
We have a motion and a second to approve the request as proposed by the applicant in case number VAR02-14, as discussed by the Board of Adjustment and in the staff report prepared for and presented to the Story County Zoning Board of Adjustment, finding that all legal principles have been satisfied, with the understanding that the existing 43-foot easement for the roadway is a legally existing non-conforming land use. Roll, please.
McGill.
Aye.
Miller.
Aye.
Stillmeyer.
Aye.
Scarlett.
Aye.
That concludes the VAR02-14. Any other business for the board this evening? Any comments from board members? Do you have any comments from staff? Are we aware yet whether there is an agenda for...
Yes, you will have a meeting. It will likely be another lengthy meeting as well. And so just be prepared. I would also like to let the Board of Adjustment know that you did ask the Board of Supervisors to request staff to look into the shadow flicker issue as we begin our annual review of the regulations. That review of the shadow flicker issue will begin in May as part of a larger package of possible amendments to land development regulations. I think the time frame is May through July, if I remember correctly.
Without anything else, I believe we will stand adjourned. Thank you. Mm-hmm.